I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
So today I am at the Norfolk Olive Tree Company, and we're in a gorgeous shed with lights, looking out to a very, very rainy, chilly, breezy day. But I cannot tell you how beautiful it is. The courtyard here is like a Mediterranean courtyard, and it's just full of olives and palms, and there's this absolutely beautiful heart-shaped arch. Well, I'm looking out through it and it's just simply stunning. So you'll see lots of photographs posted, don't worry about that. But we're inside in the warm, there's a little heater, yeah. And there's lots of lovely little plants around as well. And I'm with Paul and Antonia Smith, who are owners of Norfolk Olive Tree Company. So as you may imagine, we are going to chat about olives, but also we're going to chat about something extra. So keep listening, because on the second half of this, we're going to be talking about, as Paul puts it, spiky plants. Agave.
Agave, yeah.
And what else are we going to talk about?
Mangave. Which is a cross between agave and
that's fruit, right. So that's really interesting.
It is, yeah.
A cross between the two.
Yeah.
Okay, so cool. I'm happy that I am in the warm, but also, I mean, just walking around outside amongst all that evergreen foliage is simply stunning at this time of year, isn't it? You know, when you've been indoors, it's cold outside, you know, there's not so much greenery, but you come in here and it is just, it's like a Mediterranean paradise. It really is. I love it so much. I can even see some roses over there as well. Don't they look so pretty? And there's a blackbird coming for his mealworms.
There's the little boy and the little girl.
Right.
As I was saying earlier on, they were both born here. Yeah. They were born in the olive tree outside of my shed. And then they return all the time. Oh. So I feel particular responsibility yeah, towards them. So we're here today to sort of make sure that they've been fed as well.
Oh, it's so lovely. I might also add that whilst this podcast I am recording on my own, Mr. Plant Geek is not far from us, is he? Because as I was looking out of the window, I can see that I'm a Plant Geek badges. So if you would like one and you're in Norfolk, you could pop down to Norfolk Olive Tree Company and grab yourself a badge as well. So Michael, you may not be here, but you are as close as you're going to get right
now. With us in enamel.
Yeah. Maybe the best kind of way to be with us occasionally. Just joking. Anyway, so guys, tell us all about you. Let's find out a little bit more about Paul and Antonia. Where did your love of gardening begin, Paul?
For me, my grandfather was a horticulturalist, so he worked at lots of stately homes through probably sort of 1940s, 1950s, after the war. So as a child, I just used to go with him, walk around these amazing places, watch him... Wow. Propagate things, which was like magic, you know.
It is magic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You just think, what, you can cut that bit off that plant, put it in this sort of soil and it'll grow. And So it was just, for me, it was just a real love of being with him as a grandfather, you know, as a kid, sort of loving being with your grandparents on holiday, but actually watching, you know, this alchemy, this magic take place. Yeah. So got me into it through that. Then I went into working in arboriculture, so working, cutting trees and... So working outside all the time, and then which led into just a general sort of love of plants and gardening, which I've always had. But you know, it's difficult to find the time when you're younger. You know, you're out doing lots of other things. So you kind of, and as I've got older, I've become more and more just doing plants and not going out at all. That's what it feels like.
That's what it feels like. What about you, Antonia?
Well, my introduction was very different. I mean, I did. I didn't have a grandfather to introduce me into gardening. I did have my grandmother's gardener.
Okay.
So I would follow him around in the garden and help. But for me, it definitely came much later. I lived abroad, I lived in Paris, and I lived in the south of France. So for me, it was much more of a spectator thing. I used to love wandering around the streets of Montmartre and the 18th arrondissement where I lived,
wow.
looking at the little courtyards. So everything was always in small courtyards, balconies and things like that. So for me, that's how it's like a spectator thing, sort of taking photographs of them, really enjoying that.
That sounds really romantic.
Well, it was. I mean, the 18th arrondissement where I lived in Montmartre was very romantic. It was the romantic quarter where George Sands and a lot of the writers were. So the whole place looked like it was sort of window dressed, you know, so there was always geraniums, there were always plants, there was always pots of lavenders on tables and lots of jasmine. So for me, I just always appreciated it without really knowing much about it. And then as I've been with Paul 20 years now and I've learned a lot through him and through running the business, really. Yeah. So
I mean, what we do as a business kind of it brings a lot of that in, that thing Antonio was talking about, you know, because we deal very much in those small spaces and kind of how plants work with architecture, and it's a real, you know, you're not just a big lump of grass where you're putting plants in, you know, you're using courtyards and buildings, and that's part of, you know, the kind of plant palette we work with. Goes very well within that kind of small spaced, you know, it gives you something really different, a real sort of different feel to a space, you know, and I think that comes from Antonio. Like I say, I'm the real propagator kind of love of hands in soil, but Antonio's, you know, her views of what plants can do to a space are very important to the business. So,
well, you sound like a perfect team.
Yeah, I think we are, actually.
But I do know that you like to close the shed door and you like to keep it open,
yes.
So, you know.
Yeah, we do have differences.
Definitely that. Come in, close the door. I want to close the door.
Well, the whole of the front of this shed is complete glass, so it is like a window onto a world. So I love looking out at the different shapes and the contrast of the colours, the many shades of green, and the foliage and the shapes of the leaves and everything. So it's like a sort of living painting, and I think that's how I always view things, more as tableaus or mise-en-scènes, almost like a theatrical piece, like garden design is, isn't
it? Yeah,
it's, you know,
exactly. It's art at the end of the day. And I'm sitting here thinking, did you plan this view from the shed? Because it's literally stunning. It looks like that's exactly how you meant to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like you're looking out under the arch and you've got... I mean, it's just so beautiful.
We do move it around a fair bit. But, but there's always that trying to find focal points, you know. So, and it's, like I say, with garden design, with, you know, when we do show gardens, it's your focal point and then framing things. So, which is what this window space is. It's looking out there, like, so you've got the lovely big heart and then all the sort of daisy lyrians and cycads and various things, framing it and softening it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, you do. I think if you love plants and you can't help but try and make the plant look its best.
You know,
you don't just, you go to some garden centre and they're all in lines and you just think, well, you know, you might as well be buying packets of cereal, really. It's kind of, in some respects, you know, you don't have a kind of feel of what that plant will look like in a space. But if you put them in, you know, artistically, then...
There is something about this courtyard. When you walk in, you have an immediate sense of relaxation for a start, don't you? You just kind of breathe, like, this is... It's very relaxing. It's... Obviously, it's like the plants are mostly taller than me, so it's all around you, and you feel immersed in this lovely world of plants and evergreens. You know, it's actually raining a lot right now. It's got worse, I think, and it almost feels like it's summer because of all of the evergreen.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Absolutely. And also there's lights in the shed and you can see the reflection in the window, and it is very slightly romantic.
Mm.
I think that's your touch. Queen of the garden. I see you have a sign over your head that says Queen of the garden. You are queen of the garden.
Queen of romance, yeah.
So tell us then, why did you decide to open Norfolk Olive Tree Company? What is it about olives that you love?
I mean, there's lots of... I mean, we worked with other plants, for, like I said, for quite a long time. With olives, we found that we were dealing with something which puts a kind of immediate sort of age and gravitas into a space. So you can put something in which is evergreen, it's got history to it, it's like a living sculpture, so they're a fantastic plant to work with. If you have a space, you put one in, you can work around it, and, you know, it makes everything else, it lifts everything, makes everything else look more than just a small plant, you know, because it complements things. So we got into olives through doing that. I did garden design, used olives in the garden design. They're just amazing plants to work with. And then you suddenly realise you can buy olives in semi-different shapes and sizes. So you've got cloud trees and pom-pom trees and gnarled trees and open crown fruiting trees. So you just, you know, within, it's not just an olive tree, there's the whole diversity of what the olive tree is and what it does to a space. So
yeah, I love the really gnarly old olive trees where the bark is just so beautiful and you feel like it has a history.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Seen so
well,
much.
Well, I mean, some of these are 300
that.
Years old, you know, so
that's
that we have
mad.
And you know, they have got a lot of history.
Yeah,
obviously, you know,
that's
seen
mad.
A lot.
They retired from working life because they weren't producing enough fruit to earn their keep. Or you also get the element where you'll get a family that inherits the grandfather's olive grove, but they have no interest in it. So these trees become redundant. And I think, you know, the English have a lot to... I was going to say a lot to answer for, but that's negative. The English have a lot to do with the increased popularity of the olive tree because of things like the Chelsea Flower Show.
Yeah.
And the Occitan Garden, that was about 10 years ago. And it's really grown in popularity. And I think the English have a lot to do with that because a lot of big designers use them.
Yeah. But you can see why. Sitting here looking out here, you can see absolutely
I mean, it's a positive thing. I know lots of people have a thing where you're digging a tree up from the Mediterranean, bringing it to a damper, cold climate. But the thing is, there are so many olive trees throughout the Mediterranean. A lot of those used to be just grubbed up and dug up and cut into firewood and burnt. And, you know, they build a housing area where these trees were. So, in theory, you're saving
You're extending
trees.
their lives.
So, exactly, you know. And, you know, obviously, there are really old, special trees are not allowed to be dug up or moved. But, you know, it's so although it feels like you're bringing lots of things across that don't necessarily belong here, you know, you're actually giving new life to to these plants. Yeah.
And we have olive trees that are 300 years old, but the average tree olive tree lives for 800 years old anyway.
Word.
So it's got so much longer.
Wow.
They can live into the thousands, you know, this is so, you know,
that's amazing, isn't it? I have this, I think I've probably told you guys this before. One day, I'm going to have like a courtyard garden, which is likely to be much smaller than what we're looking at here. And I want one big olive tree, in the middle of the courtyard, and then like some Mediterranean table and chairs, and just have some lavenders, maybe some salvias, a little like maybe kind of like a nice clematis or even a jasmine, maybe, you know, something like that. I want it to be quite basic but beautiful. Do you know what I mean? And I think an olive tree gives you that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, when you think about how many new builds there are in the UK, you know, and I wrote about it recently. Properties now are 33% smaller than they were in the 70s, and gardens are 33% smaller. So it's about maximising on that space and making it really work all year round. And the Mediterranean palette does that because it is evergreen. So there's no periods of being dormant. They just work all year round.
Yeah.
And so many of them are super hardy as well. We think, oh, they're Mediterranean. They're not going to cope with the Norfolk or the UK weather. But actually, you know, places like Cambridge has less hours of rain a year than Barcelona. Barcelona has more rain per capita than Cambridge.
Of course, we're on the sort of same zonal codes as much of the Mediterranean. So we're kind of an 8A, 8B zonal code, which means, you know, obviously we can grow pretty much the same plants. The only thing we ever struggle with, sometimes we have quite a lot of rain, obviously lately. Some of the plants don't, you know, certainly the spiky plants, as we'll talk about, some of those don't like as much of, you know, wet that we get in. But across, obviously, in East Anglia, we're, our rainfall is lower than other parts of the country, obviously.
Amazing. Yeah. I love the zones, actually. I was looking at a map about zones. Yeah. It's incredible how they kind of sweep across and you think, well, how is up there the same as down there or across there? It's quite...
I think in the UK, it's one of those... Because they're obviously an American kind of thing, we see the zones. So we don't know. Lots of people say, oh, it's zone 7 or it's zone 9, and we don't know what that means. Yeah. But I mean, I've, same as you, in the last few years, got myself...
It's quite clever.
..fay with the zones. It is, yeah.
I think
if
you do that, it can really teach you a lot about what you can grow, what you can maximise in your space. In America, where I'll be, I've already checked out my zone. It's 7B.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. I had to work that one out straight away. It was never mind the apartment or anything practical in any way. I just wanted to know what I could grow.
Maybe slightly colder than we get here, then, in the wintertime.
Overnight, in the wintertime, it's minus... It's already, like... December was like -1, -2, minus more than that. But then it heats up in the day. Yeah. But actually that can cause some problems, you know, because it heats up quite quick in the day, but it's very cold at night. And so that gives you other problems with plants,
it does,
you know. So interesting. Anyway, now really the point of this talk today is all about the spiky plants. So we're going to have a little break for a moment. But before I do that, can you just give listeners an idea of what we're going to talk about in the second half?
We'll be looking at and talking about agave and mangave, which are a cross with an agave and another plant called a manfreda. There's over 200 different types of agave. The mangaves are developing all the time, so there's certainly over 40 now. They're being bred. They're not available in the UK retail wise yet, so we'll be looking at those, talking about the differences in them, obviously whether you can grow them over here, what best way to grow them, what conditions they need, and just the variation in them and why certain people like me become obsessive about plants like agave, and our house is full of them, and people come over for dinner and end up with holes all over their elbows.
Not joking.
Hence the spiky plants.
Yes. Spiky plants.
So we're back. I hope you enjoyed hearing all about olive trees with Paul and Antonia, and we're still here in the lovely warm shed. Although we have just taken a walk around, haven't we? Had a little look around. Got a bit chilly, but we had to check out the agaves and also the mangaves, which is what we're going to talk about now in this half. It is so interesting. I mean, I know a fair bit about agaves, and interestingly, on a flight very recently, you know, you have all the films that you can watch.
Yeah.
There's obviously loads of new films and all of that. I picked a film about agave. So it was all about, in South America, a couple of families who it's been in their... You know, growing agave's been in their family for, you know, decades and decades. And then, of course, the consumer demand for tequila and how just growing the one agave... Yeah. Is it the blue?
Tequila.
Yeah, okay. So that's the one that produces tequila, but because of the overproduction of it, that's now causing real soil problems and in this business that they were running. So they were starting to diversify and look at growing other agaves and doing things with their land and It was so interesting. It made the flight go by really quickly. But I thought of you genuinely when I watched
it.
I tell you what, I can tell you, because I took a photograph of it on my phone. So when we've finished this, I'll show you the photograph and tell you what the name of it was. I can't remember now. But it was really, really interesting. And I just, because I know you guys, obviously, you know, you're big into agave and mangave. And it just made me think about you guys when I was there. Yeah. Anyway, so where did this obsession start from then, Paul?
Spiky plants, agave. I think, again, it's a plant that I think most people are familiar with. So obviously there's tequila, but most people are familiar with seeing them in south of France or Spain or wherever.
Yeah.
The big spiky plant, giant cactus looking plant, growing either beside the road or in sort of middle of towns in a kind of big bed. So it's that same thing, because it's an evergreen, because it's structural, because it's gives you something completely different, and also it's incredibly versatile as a plant in terms of you know, you can crossbreed them. You can say, oh, I like this one. It's green. This one's got stripes in it. We'll cross the two. We'll get something
that's
in between the two. And that's, I think, so that's cool. What, you know, they're real versatile plant. And for plant geeks, it's a kind of, it's very much one of those plants you can go, I'm going to see what I can do with this plant. And every plant, they pup, which means they have young that come from the root systems on them. Not all agave, but most of them do. They can come through different to the parent plant.
Right.
So all the time you're getting a new pup through and you think, I wonder if this has got a stripe in it or a variegation in it. And
that's cool. Yeah.
And then you think, if it has, that it'll be the only one I've ever seen like that, and I'll be able to put it on my agave websites and show people, and they'll go, oh, you've got one of those with a stripe in it. So it's kind of a real, you know.
I just need you to know that Paul's very animated right now. I think we can tell that he absolutely loves this very much.
I think the thing is, certainly with agave and the mangaves, it's one of those things. If we've all got, sort of, well, lots of us have got a collector genus. So for me, I was, as a teenager, I was buying albums, records, vinyl. It's that desire to have something which is rare and unusual. And I think with agave, there is definitely that. It's not just a plant. You're not just going to find them all being exactly the same. There's going to be a variation in them. So there's over 200 different types. But you'll get some which have got stripes through the middle of the leaves, you know, so you'll get a variation in the plant, and you're looking for that all the time. So it's got that collector, sort of geek collector thing about them, you know.
Okay. We love the plant geek thing going on, for
Yeah.
Now, because obviously they are from South America, you would perhaps assume that they wouldn't grow so well here, but that's not the case, is it?
It's not the case with all of them. I mean, again, like I'm saying, there's over 200 types that are, majority of them will grow here. Pretty much all of them will grow here in certain conditions, but there's at least 20, 30 of them which you can just put in the garden at home and leave, and they will grow. If we have really wet winters, maybe just put a makeshift shelter over them. But the cold ones, some of them will take minus 20 or even colder if they're dry. But even the sort of common types, like the Americana, which is the one you see in south of France and Spain, that'll take sort of minus 10, minus 12 without a problem and wet. So you might get a few brown splodges on the leaves where it's got the damping, but when spring comes through, you cut those side leaves off and comes through from the middle. So, you know, it's a plant which will cope with our conditions.
So it's mainly the wet to be careful
the
of,
wet
perhaps.
Is always an issue with wet. I mean, they're succulents, so any sort of succulent is not going to like too much water. So, but if you plant them in pots, so they're off the ground, water will drain out. If you dig a bed and put lots of grit and stuff in the bed, then also, you know, it'll help the drainage and you know, they won't have a problem. It's only sitting in heavy, wet soil that things don't like.
And planting them at an angle as well. If you are putting them in, we've got lots in our borders at home, and Paul's put them all at an angle. So when there is heavy rain, the rain just drains away.
Drains off, so you're not.
So it's all about the drainage, isn't it?
Drainage is a huge, huge part of growing any succulents. But I mean, we have lots of even, you know, Ripsalis and plants like that, which really shouldn't grow outside. We have them growing outside at home, you know. Right. Because we have so many plants.
Because you're in zone,
zone 8A. And certainly in the city, you know, you've got, and we're a walled garden, you know, we've got quite a microclimate and bananas and palms in the garden. So, you know, you can have little spots where it's quite dry and quite sheltered. And those plants will, as long as they're not too wet, they'll go through the cold. You know?
Love it. So, okay, so from your passion for agave has come Mangave,
yeah.
Okay, so this is pretty new to me, apart from when I spoke to you about it. So tell us what this is. This is a cross between.
Well, mangave, there's a plant called Manfreda, which is also known as a tuberose, which is a plant that grows in the wild in America, in southern states of America, where the agave grow. I think it was 2002, something like that. Someone discovered a cross between agave Celsi and a Manfreda, and sort of looked at it and thought, oh, this is an unusual plant, it's a new plant, how people do. And they sort of went in from there on thinking, well, I bet we can make several different types by crossing Manfredas with lots of different agave. So that's how it started. And there's now over 40 different types that have been developed from just crossing the Manfreda with various, because there's over 200 agave, just keep crossing them, see what you get from it. And it's become a new sort of, I didn't know about it until probably 3 years ago, and I was on eBay, as you are sometimes, and I was typing in agave, you know, thinking, oh, I wonder what agave on eBay. And this plant came up, which was a mangave. Right. And I thought, what on earth is that? So I looked into it from there and realised, oh, this is a whole new world, you know. So I'd got 100-odd sort of different agave, and I thought, this is a new one. I can go on these now. So
a new obsession, Antonia.
A new obsession. The house is getting ever smaller. The garden is getting ever smaller. I mean, he is an obsessive, so...
Oh, come on.
You're not kidding. So just tell us about the crossing process. How does that work?
You cross from the flowers, obviously, pollination, but you find... Basically, there's a chap called Hans Hansen, who's a Dutch guy. He's working in America, and he's pretty much developed these sort of 40 different at the moment. It's an ever-increasing number. And he's basically started them off by cross-pollinating when they're flowering, but then they're also now growing them cell-grown plants. So, because obviously you can get one from a cross, but you can't necessarily get 50 the same. You know, every pollination will throw up different genetic sort of codes within the plant. So they then find the one they want, and then they sort of cell-grow right. that. So they haven't hit the market in the UK yet. They're in America. There's one or two starting to sort of be grown in Spain. I think they're going to launch them in 2021 was the plan to launch them in the UK at Chelsea. But by that time, you know, there's people like me and lots of other people who are collecting these and bringing them over and growing their own ones. Yeah. And so it's you know.
So you're propagating them yourself as well, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I've got... quite a few. I've got 25 different ones at the moment, and some of them I have managed to probably get numerous sort of 8-10 different ones that I've got sort of several of. So
just tell us a little bit about what they look like. So out here,
yeah,
outside the shed door, there was a couple there. One was called Bloodspot, wasn't
yeah.
it? I was a bit transfixed. I want to see it in the summer.
Well, they're basically, it's got the good thing about mangave is that they tend to have characteristics from both parents, but they tend to not be too spiky. So a lot of people are put off agave. I mean, I love the spikiness, but a lot of people are put off.
Your arm didn't like the
exactly,
spikiness.
Getting, I
I've
have
heard about the arm. You don't want to be spiked by an agave.
It's part of the you know the love for them. It's like having a spiky wife.
Paul's used to it, huh?
Yeah, he's used to that. But the
mangave are softer. They don't have they've because the tuberose, which is this plant here,
yeah.
Manfreda is a much softer leaf, and it doesn't have the spikes on it. So okay. Basically, you're getting a lot of the spots and stripes, which this has in the summer, onto an agave, but also you're softening the spikiness of it. Okay. So they're a much friendlier plant, so they work well as a house plant. So some of them will take extreme cold as well, but basically they colour up in the sun. So this time of the year, like the one you looked at out there, is not the spots aren't showing on it that much, but you put it under a sun lamp or once the summer comes, you get amazing colours. And that's the great thing with them. The colour is, you know, reds and yellows and spots and stripes. They've got everything. And that's what makes them so interesting to people because they, you know, they're
completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the one next to that was, you said, like a lavender kind
Lavender
of
Lady, which is attenuata agave, which is a really soft swan's neck agave. I don't know if you see them in Tenerife with a big flower. But anyway, it's a really soft agave, but it's got a real sort of purple lavender hue to it, which comes from crossing with the. I mean, sometimes they put two agave crossed with a Manfreda, and so they take all different characteristics from a plant. I mean, it's, you know, you've got to do something, haven't you, in the cold winter's days. You've got to mess around with plants and cross things, haven't you?
I love that. You've just got to mess around with plants and cross them and all sorts of things. Yeah. You do, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, we've got loads. We've got, you know, at our nursery, we've got a whole polytunnel of probably a couple of thousand agave and mangaves in there at the moment. So,
and then you bring them into the courtyard here?
They come in here, we sell them. We take them to shows and sell them.
Sell online?
Yeah, sell online.
So, but we tend to grow, because they're all hard grown. So a lot of plants, if they're imported, they're grown under, you know, really sort of perfect conditions. They're sort of, they're hydroponically grown in sort of 5-degree heat, and we grow all ours outside, everything's grown outside. This time of the year, when it's really wet, we'll put them under cover, but there's no heating in the polytunnel. Wow. It'll still go down to -4, -5.
Right.
And
survival,
you know,
of the fittest.
Yeah, well, that's the way. And then
it's
if
good,
you're,
though, right?
If you're breeding
you're
from that
plants.
Plant, then you know that it, genetically, yeah. it's passing down a stronger yeah. coat. So you're all the time, you're developing stronger plants, which are happier in our climate. So, and I grow from seed as well. So they're grown from seed right the way through, all hard grown. So they're all cold grown. There's no
How many heating. Years does it take for them to grow?
This plant here, which you see there, that's a whale's tongue agave. That one was a seed.
The Ovidifolia.
That's 4 years old from seed.
Okay.
So that's now in a 1 litre pot and is just hanging right. over the edge of the pot. So it's that okay. kind of size. The Ovidifolia is quite a fast-growing agave.
Okay, so they take a while to grow, but how
yeah.
satisfying is that
oh,
process?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I mean, I love it. And the thing about agave as well, you can grow them from seed really easily. So they'll germinate within a week. So it's not like stick it in the fridge
wow.
and, you know, like you get all these... Sometimes you have to put them in the fridge and then jump up and down and, you know, wave some burning sage over it or something. It's not that, you know, it literally is a... Put it on top of some vermiculite or
right.
you know, soil-based vermiculite and...
And it
you know,
will
Yeah,
germinate.
And it, within a week you'll get, like, little blades of grass coming up. And that's
cool.
that. And then 4 years later...
Four years later, you've got a lovely plant. I have to just say, though, completely off topic, you've got a bird's nest next to that.
That's where the blackbirds that are playing in the garden or foraging, that's where they were born, in an olive tree just outside the shed door.
That's
so
gorgeous.
I've kept that for them as part of their memory box.
They want to come back in here and have a nest there, that have some babies.
Kids, they
in
just
the
yeah, they just might want some warmth. They want to pop in the shed and
they
go to bed.
They will do.
Oh,
yeah, they do come in.
Paul,
here.
Do you think that this has satisfied your obsession for the years ahead?
Unlikely.
For the next, what will happen? I mean, I know how I work, and what will happen is that. By the time mangave come across to the UK, probably in 2 years' time, because they will be at other garden centres, I will go off them a little bit. Because it's that, it's that need to find something that other people haven't got, you know. So it's just... And so, although, you know, I'll still love them as plants, but I will certainly start to go, well, what can I do here?
Next?
What's next? Yeah, because
next?
That's... I just need... to find things all the
but
time.
But looking ahead is good for your business anyway, isn't it? So when mangaves start to come onto the market, you can sell them here,
yes,
but then you'll be moving on to the next thing. So you're kind of like ahead of the game. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of plants, isn't it? It's part of loving plants. You just, you're constantly looking for new things. You know, I'm not particularly, you know, I'm not the sort of person who wants to just buy sort of Dutch trolleys of plants and get whatever on the availability list. You know, it's not why I've got into plants. You know, I've got into plants because I love plants, and of course some of those plants on availability lists are nice plants, but it's not, you know, I don't just want to ship in 200
thing.
Of something, you
sure.
know. I want to find things that are one-offs.
So basically, if you're listening at home and you would like to know what's going to be the next big thing, contact Norfolk Olive Tree Company, speak to Paul.
Yeah, and I've got it in my polytunnel.
He's already got it. He's already on it.
Plant forecaster.
Yeah. Never mind plant hunter.
Yeah.
Plant forecaster.
Yeah.
We
it's
like
interesting
this.
Interesting. You talking about the Tequiliana agave and its popularity, and how it has been overgrown. The Tequiliana isn't actually that tough, and you don't find in the UK.
No.
And we were actually recently approached by a tequila company that was going on tour doing sort of mobile promotions in nightclubs and they wanted a Tequiliana. And we said, you're not going to find a Tequiliana. But then you do find so many of the specimens have similarities to other ones, so we could find them.
Right.
Something
that
was very similar.
Sword-shaped leaves.
Sure.
Upright kind of growth pattern. But there's, yeah, I mean, they won't take hardly any frost at all, tequilaana, so it's a
plant. We won't be making our own Norfolk.
You won't be making Norfolk tequila?
It. No, we won't. We did look into it, but...
Damn!
And they take about 8 years before you...
It's
complicated.
On the film I was watching, I mean, they don't give too much away about their process, but I was watching them out in the fields harvesting. Wow, they are some tough plants.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Big, heavy, like proper chopping off the stems, you know, it's quite incredible
ton,
to watch.
They?
Absolutely.
Really dense. The foliage is really dense and sinewy. It's really difficult stuff to cut.
It was interesting just to listen to kind of the positives and negatives to that kind of farming, because obviously it's causing problems with the soil. You know, it's monoculture at the end of the day, and that's causing its own problems with biodiversity. But then also, how do they continue to produce them when the demand for tequila is through the roof right now across the world?
Yeah.
So they have another product that's where tequila came from. Now this is, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a drink that they drink in South America that's made from other agave plants.
Sotol?
I can't remember the name. I'll have to check it out. And they said that's actually the true drink.
Yeah.
Tequila is actually only made for the masses, but this true drink.
Right.
Oh, I can see Paul going.
Yeah, no.
It's the true drink that's made in South America, and that can come from other agave. So they were looking at doing that. I'll look up the name for you.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting just to see all about it. Thank you so much. It's really interesting. I love sitting in here. Can I bring wine next time?
Yes, you can. We were not 10 o'clock in the morning. I think we might have.
I said
had
next time.
Next
not
time.
I've
got a bottle of rum in here, but.
Not tequila.
Thank you very much. Where can everyone find you online?
The Norfolk Olive Tree Company.co.uk. We're on all the social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, you name it. But yeah, all the W's, the Norfolk Olive Tree Company.co.uk.
Nice.
And here in Norwich, we're just so lucky. We're bang in the centre of Norwich. We've got a beautiful view of the cathedral. So we're on Riverside Road, overlooking the river and overlooking the cathedral. So we're very lucky in terms of we're 5 minutes from the railway station.
Yeah, so come and take a look. I mean, the courtyard is absolutely lovely. And you will definitely have a very lovely welcome, because there are blackbirds.
Yes, it's very Walt Disney.
Walt Disney world of olives and agaves. And mangaves too. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my chat with Antonia and Paul Smith from the Norfolk Olive Tree Company. It is always such a pleasure to go along and visit them, because their Mediterranean courtyard is not only just so lovely, it's so atmospheric. You genuinely feel like you are taken away somewhere overseas. And they're both so knowledgeable and such lovely people. So thoroughly enjoyed myself. I hope you enjoyed it too. And one day I will definitely have myself a great big old olive tree. I can't wait. So at the moment I'm recording this little piece over in Charlotte in North Carolina, which is where I'm going to be on and off for the next couple of years. But don't worry, Michael and I will still be doing plenty of podcasting and so much more as usual, and having our general plant shenanigans across the year. I'll be back very soon, in fact, in just a few weeks. But the most exciting thing about being here in North Carolina is it's actually home to the native Venus flytrap. So sometime in the summer, I'm going to go on a little bit of an expedition. I'm going to have to probably drive about 4 or 5 hours over to the coast, and I'm going to hunt down some Venus flytraps. And you never know, maybe Michael will even come over and join me. So that would be an awesome podcast, wouldn't it? And another thing about January, so there's no January blues going on here, or any more perhaps, because the month of January is no longer just that, is it? Of course, everybody knows it as Veganuary. So the movement has taken off incredibly well over the last couple of years, and I thought it was appropriate just to chat about it briefly in this section, because of course I'm vegan, Michael isn't vegan, but he's giving it a go this month, so he's giving Veganuary a go. It's interesting to watch, to see what kind of food he's eating and how he's getting on. But there was actually a couple of days ago a post on Veganuary's Instagram account, and they have 370,000 people signed up to do Veganuary this year. That's incredible. And their data shows that there's only three countries in the whole world where nobody has signed up. So that's a lot of people across the world giving plant-based eating a go. So for this podcast, let's just focus on the plant side of being vegan. And for me, and I've said this before, it's kind of like a lifestyle thing. You know, I grow so much fruit and vegetables, and the flavor when you grow your own is just so amazing. I mean, you simply can't beat it. And I know we always say it, but if you don't grow your own, try it, because honestly, you'll be amazed at the difference in flavor from things like sprouts that don't taste so great from the supermarket, but when you grow them yourself, they're amazing. Tomatoes, cucumbers are always so much sweeter, just everything really. So I grow so much that I'd eat a lot of vegetables anyway, and fruit too, although I don't grow as much fruit as veg and salad. And I was vegetarian for years anyway. I decided to take the leap to veganism a while back now, and I've never turned back for many reasons. My decision was for health, it was for the planet, it was for animals. It was because plants are just my life. I feel like I should be a living, breathing human plant. I just love them so much. But one thing I've learned from being vegan, and I think this is something perhaps I hadn't expected, is that my cooking has changed. My cooking is so much better. So when you work with plants and you grow your own plants and then you cook with them, but you're not adding meat or you're not adding dairy in any way, you have to look at other ways to make things tasty. So I've learned so much about herbs and spices and different flavorings and just different ingredients from all over the world to cook some really awesome dishes. So, you know, looking at it from just simply the plant side, it's just absolutely brilliant. And I hope my husband agrees. I hope he's agreeing that I'm cooking much better than I did before. I'm sure that he does. And now, of course, is a really great time to try it, because there's so much available in the shops now. There's loads of plant-based food that you can pick up in almost all the supermarkets too. So at the beginning of the month, I put a post out just to say, if you're going to give Veganuary a go, keep me updated, because if you start it on the 1st of January and you make it through the month and then you let me know how you got on, just giving it a month trial is amazing and brilliant. So well done to anyone giving it a go. Let me know, because I'm going to send you a little gift. Yeah. So if you follow Plant-Based Podcast on Instagram, Twitter or social media, you know, give us a shout. Tell us how you're getting on if you're trying Veganuary. How do you feel about it? How do you feel in yourself? Has it made you think of plants differently? Or has it made you think of the planet or animals or people differently as well? We would absolutely love to hear. One person who is updating us all the time, which is brilliant, is our friend over at the Essex Allotment. So give him a follow. And he has been showing kind of the food, his shopping and stuff. And it's been really, really interesting to see it from someone's point of view who's really, really new to it. Like, it's so involved in my everyday life, I just don't think about it anymore. But yes, it's really, really good to see someone giving it a go right from the beginning. So yeah, there you go. Now, another thing that I must mention before I finish chatting away is our plant-based podcast TV show. So yes, that's right, we launched a little plant-based podcast TV as kind of special episodes for January and February. They're on our YouTube channel, so just look up the Plant-Based Podcast and you'll see not only the podcasts that we've recorded in the past, but some new, fun, interesting, sometimes silly, sometimes serious, hopefully educational and interesting to watch little films, which are all about, of course, the world of plants. So far we've had a fun plant-based news, we've done a really fun to film and hope fun to watch allotment games as well, where we went down to my allotment with Hench Herbivore. Hench, of course, is vegan, and he was also on the podcast in series one. So if you haven't listened to that, check it out. It's all about plant-based nutrition. So that was really interesting. And he put us through our paces on the allotment. We had to do courgette curls and watering can arm lifts and all kinds of things. It was really fun. But coming up, we've also got some TV about plants that you can grow in a garden. So plants for shade, plants for sun. We've got a load of houseplant talk. So we sat down, we looked at all of my houseplants. I can't remember how many there were, but there was well over 100, 150 houseplants. We focused on just a few, but we're going to chat through houseplants for sun and shade as well. So they'll be really interesting. I'm missing my houseplants. So while I'm out here in Charlotte, my houseplants have been divided by four people and they're looking after them for me. Thank you guys if you're listening. So we've got loads coming up on the plant-based podcast. We have some amazing, absolutely amazing new guests coming up for the series three, which will be released later on this year, not so long away. So keep on listening and thank you as ever for supporting us. We love you, plant lovers. And the next plant-based podcast is down to Michael. So stay tuned.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.